Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
My name is Glenn, and I am a compulsive overeater. I'm a recovering bulimic, and I definitely have been addicted to things like sugar and white flour, which I could not get enough of. I came into OA 33 years ago at the age of 25, and I was a lost soul. I was a broken person. I had grown up as an obese child, started overeating at the age of about 6 or 7. And that was a result of not knowing how to make it in the world of kindergarten. There was a bully or two in my kindergarten class. I'll back up and I'll just say I came from a very loving family. My mother and father were very They did pretty much everything for us. I mean, I am the middle child of three. I have an older brother and younger sister. And family life, our home life was very good. And there was dysfunction. I mean, I think most families have some to a greater or lesser degree. But home life was good. When my trouble started when school started. And I encountered some people that were tough to get along with, I'll say that. And I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to react. And out of frustration, after a while, and this is just a recollection, because it was a long time ago, I was never like a stand up for yourself kind of a kid. I was always a kind of like a run home and cry to mom kind of thing. And somewhere along the line, I realized that I love to eat. I don't know if I realized that I love to eat, but I just ate. I found food as a solace. And through my grade school, my time all the way through grade school, I dealt with not knowing how to get along with difficult kids by coming home and just pounding down bowls of sugared cereal and all kinds of other things. I put on weight, and I put on a lot, and I really, I think there's a nature versus nurture thoughts that I have going on in my mind, and I think that I was predisposed to being sensitive to certain foods, and it was mixed along with the situational part of just not knowing, being confused when I was teased. I didn't understand why someone would want to hurt another person. It didn't make sense to me why someone would go out of their way to make someone else's day difficult. And I'm asked if there's anything to improve my microphone sound. I don't really know. I don't know. Is it really bad?
I put my sound up super high, but no, I can still hear you. Just if there was any way you could do something, that's fine though. It should be.
Yeah, I'll just talk a little bit louder. Okay. So anyways, I found food and I love food, and it seemed like, and this goes back to my not getting that book of life that other people seem to get, and I missed out on. It seemed like other kids just had something that I didn't. They knew their way around. They had something that I was missing. And I became aware of it more and more over time. And I never knew what that was, but I always felt like lost and like I was in some kind of a fog. And to this day, I don't know what that's all about, but other people seemed to get life and I didn't. I felt different. As I got heavier, I got the teasing increased. And I got a heck of a lot of it everything. And being a person that didn't really stand up for himself, I was someone that could be picked on and you could get away with it. And it happened a lot. And the more it happened, the more I ate. And I worked my way up to 270 pounds by the time I was in 10th grade. And I was a mess. I wasn't good on hygiene or anything like that. And I retreated into myself so much. I was very mechanically inclined and I did my own thing and I didn't do a whole, I had a very small few people that I hung out with, kids in the neighborhood. They were like me. They were grease monkeys. And I kind of even went out of my way to be different, to like just kind of turn my back on a world that seemed to turn its back on me. And I became a real rebel. I didn't like things that other people liked. I thought trends and things like that were stupid. When the world took a right, I took a left turn. But for some reason, or in 10th grade, somewhere around my junior year of high school, I decided that I wanted to lose weight. It was going to be a project for me or something. And I went about doing it. And over a little over a year's time, I lost about, I probably a year and a half, I lost about 100 pounds just from cutting back on all the junk that I was eating. And doing a lot of, I guess, what you would call starvation, anorexic kind of diet stuff. Like I would just eat grapefruits and drink black coffee, and stuff like that, and eat like next to nothing else. And I was able to do that. I was able to do that and just kind of get on a high of not eating. And so I really relate to the anorexics out there about that feeling of control of not eating the food. And so I had some behaviors around anorexic behaviors at times. And anyways, I lost a lot of weight and I really thought that my weight was the source of all my problems. That if I lost weight, other kids would like me. Somehow things would, all my problems would clear up. And I came to realize that nothing changed. The day that I went walking, I was waiting to cross a city street, and there was a lot of traffic going by. And as I was waiting, there were some people on the sidewalk behind me just walking down the street, and I heard laughter. And I automatically thought they were laughing at me because that was ingrained in me that whenever there was laughter, the joke was on me somehow. And it took until I was in OA to realize, to go flash back on that moment and see that I was a fat person living in a thin person's body at that moment. And being thin didn't fix it. And over time, and I kept my weight off for a while on my own. I would treat myself to certain foods on the weekends, and then during the week, I would well, Monday would come around, I'd start the diet every Monday morning. And I was able to do it. Over time, that became increasingly difficult to do because, as I now know, I have an illness of compulsive overeating, which is It has a physical component and an emotional and a spiritual one. And I never worked on anything emotional or spiritual. And my disease gets worse over time, never better, it progresses. And the diets became increasingly hard to get on and then stay on. To the point where I got to hitting some life events that brought up feelings in me that I was not pushing down with the food at the time because I was trying to stay thin. And then I would just have these collapses where I would just binge uncontrollably because I just couldn't take all the stuff that was coming up that I was pushing down pretty much my whole growing up. And I at times I was eating, I was so stressful over certain things that I ate so much that I was so uncomfortable. And I thought if I could just get rid of it, well, I became a bulimic. I learned how to purge. I learned how to throw up, and I can do it at the drop of a hat. I've gained control of my esophagus. I don't even have to stick a finger down my throat. If I were to swallow poison today, I could get rid of it. That's probably the only benefit to that. But I would eat just tens of thousands of calories of food. I started binging on pretty much pure sugar items. And you can let your imagination run with that one. I eat lots and lots of all the worst stuff. And I would get rid of it. And then I would do it again after I got rid of it. And I would do that several times in certain days that where I would just binge purge until I was pretty much exhausted at the end of the night and I would just collapse exhausted. And as I was doing this, my life started becoming increasingly more unmanageable. I wasn't returning phone calls. I was having trouble with my job because my thoughts were all on food and getting the next fix. I became really depressed. And my low self-esteem sunk even lower because I developed a lot of self-hatred because I was given that message by the bullies over the years that I was going to curse. I'm not going to curse. Anyways, I heard a lot of nasty stuff, basically telling me that I was no good, and I was never going to be any good. I was fat, stupid, and ugly. And I believed all that, and I really took it to heart. And I got to the point where it just seemed like nothing could ever be fixed because I felt like I was lost pretty much from my earliest memories. That I had a plan for suicide, and I got pretty close carrying it out. But what happened is I saw a 1-800 crisis line phone number printed on the backside of a section of a local newspaper. It said, for people having trouble with alcoholism, gambling, drug addiction, and it mentioned anorexia, bulimia, depression, all these different things, and it advertised this number. I, who had learned not to trust people because people hurt me when I opened up and reached out, and not my family, but the world out there, that I wasn't, because I got hurt, I didn't want to ever rely on anybody for anything. I finally, after trying to do everything myself and control my food and my weight myself, reached out for help, and I called that number. I was referred to an eating disorder therapist. I'm from the East Coast, and this was a therapist that was located in downtown Philadelphia. And I ended up seeing that person, who was a self-described recovering food addict, who asked me in my first talk with a woman, my first talk with her, have you ever heard of Overeaters Anonymous? And I said, yeah, because one time when I was a kid, I saw a commercial for Overeaters Anonymous. This was in the mid-70s. I saw one commercial from it for it, and I never saw anything else or heard anything else about it again, and I never thought about it once. But when I was asked the question, I was able to answer yes, and it seemed so odd that it was just nothing that was ever came to mind. But I remembered that commercial. And she said, well, and she either said in it, I just don't remember, it's too long ago, I'm gonna suggest that you go to Overeaters Anonymous meetings as we're doing therapy together. Or she said, I'm gonna require as a client that you go to Overeaters Anonymous. I don't remember which one it was. But this was in February of 1991. And I started to see this therapist, and I worked my way over to this first OA meeting that I went to, which was held at Friends Hospital, which is the oldest psychiatric hospital in the United States. And I walked into this room full of people that were talking things about food and wanting to eat and having eaten like I did. And I couldn't believe it, because I never encountered another person that liked to do that like I did. And I came and I listened. And so what happened was I started taking in what people were saying and starting hearing things like, get a sponsor.
Excuse me, you've got 5 minutes left.
Thank you. And call me every day when I got a sponsor. He said, call me each day. Tell me what you're going to eat. I followed directions, and I trusted, because I knew that what I was doing wasn't working. I finally became willing to trust. And there's just a whole bunch of stuff I don't have time to talk about. But I went to meetings, and things were suggested, and I took them, because I was trying to save my life, because I was at the end of my ropes. And things got better, and I was able to refrain from eating compulsively. And my abstinence dates from March 21st of 1991. And for me, a person who basically spent my entire growing up around food and eating and overeating, that's a miracle. A higher power, which I came to believe in when I came into the program, because I didn't have one prior to, has become the biggest miracle in my life, and that's what keeps me abstinent, because I can't do it. Even after 33 years, whenever I look at the first step, it still says, we admitted we were powerless over food. It doesn't say, well, because you haven't had this particular food for this X number of years, you'll be all right with it now. That never changes. I will be a food addict, a compulsive eater until I leave the world. And I remember that on a daily basis in my prayers in the morning. I concentrated on steps 1, 2, and 3, and I always remember where I came from. I also go to AA meetings, and there's this one old, crusty old dude that used to say all the time, you know, don't forget where you come from, bum. Now, I can take that, I have to be careful. You know, I know some people do, you have to be careful with the language about calling oneself a bum, but for me, it's worked, because it's like, don't forget where you come from. You know, always remember who you are. Don't get above other people. Don't get above newcomers who you see and tend to want to judge and think you're doing it right and they're starting off on the wrong foot and all this kind of stuff. And I always got to remember that. And they say, in those other meetings too, I've heard it a lot, you know, a grateful heart would never drink again. And the same is true for me. A grateful heart will never have to go and eat my face off again today. I'm working on the goal of staying in Overeaters Anonymous my entire life. I do it just for today, but that's what I want to do because I found a piece of heaven and I don't ever want it to stop. I would not give up the life I have today for anything that I had before. And there's some things that I let go of and lost in my life that I sure wish I still had, but and not food, but some other things. But I'll the world can keep those things if I get to keep what I've gotten from my way, which is a life of sane and happy usefulness. And the way my life looks today is so different in my eyes, even though there's a lot of things that haven't changed. I look at the world totally differently, and I look at myself differently. And I try to carry the message. Sometimes I'm confused as to what to do, but then I go back to that line in the big book that says our primary purpose is to be helpful. And if I can keep that first and foremost in my mind, my thoughts, when I'm talking to a newcomer, you know, or someone that's anybody in the program, that I got the best chance of maybe being helpful. So I plan on sticking around. I'm just glad to be in this program, and I'm glad to have all of you because I can't do it myself. Two things, I'll stop with this. Two things that are the biggest changes from my life before away and to my life now. It's number one, power greater than myself, which can manifest itself in all kinds of different forms. And the other is the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. And with that, I'll end up and right on time. So that's all I got. Thanks for listening, everyone. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of me are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you did ask a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the raise your hand icon. And so the meeting is now open.
Hey, Glenn, thank you. Thank you for an incredible share. And what is your relationship with your higher power and how did that come together?
Okay, good question. Thank you. My relationship to my higher power and how I came to know one. When I came into my first meeting or my first couple of meetings, I had this recollection of, since I had no kind of religious training or any kind of relationship with any kind of a thing, any kind of a higher power, I decided to call my higher power God, and I made up my higher power to be basically like that childhood friend that I never had and always wanted. And that was just to be my best friend in the world, always there for me, to help me and guide me. And it started with that, just God as a friend, a perfect friend that I would want to have. And over time, it's just grown into just being some kind of, I would say, a mystery, you know, kind of just like, I don't know, like a creative force of the universe. I call it God. It's just something that's much bigger than me. And always there for me. Even when people aren't, just all day long, all night long, and that I can always rely on it for strength. That's pretty much it. My higher power is just a loving, kind, entity that just wants the very best for me. You know, that's this thing that I pray to every morning and every night formally in my prayers and talk to during the day as needed. When I walk into a meeting at work, business meeting, I say, you know, God, come in with me. My one sponsor used to say that whenever, wherever you go, bring God in with you. When I forget to do that, then there, things don't go as well. But if I do that, I always maintain my humility. But I keep in regular contact by prayers in the morning and at night. And I also spend time in quiet meditation where I just let my thoughts get calm. And I hear the voice of which I believe is my intuition, which I think that's how my higher power communicates to me most of all, is through my intuition, as well as through other people too. That's another way my God can communicate to me. But that's pretty much my relationship with the higher power and how it began. And next we'll go to Carla.
Oh, hi there. Thank you so much. Actually.
Oh, you got muted, Carla. Somehow.
Sorry. I must have, I don't know. How did you come to being at ease with a weight? And do you weigh yourself? Are you aware of that number? And how did that come to be?
I do weigh myself. I weigh myself once a month at the beginning of each month, and pretty much just to just see if I'm staying on track, and that's all. Just to make sure that I'm not losing some weight, you know, that like I have some, maybe have some kind of an illness going on, my weight starts going up for some reason, and maybe. Maybe, I mean, I weigh and measure my food, everything that I eat. And, but I never know, and, you know, it's just something to keep tabs on my weight. When I came into the program, I only had, maybe 10 to 20 pounds heavier, something like that. I don't know. I'm 6'1" and I'm about 145. I might have been about 170 or 80 when I came in. I really don't remember because I was keeping my weight off through bulimia, even though I was binging my brains out. And it was about just fixing my crazy life, not wanting to end my life, what it was about for me. But I've been maintaining for 30 something years, I guess, for the most part. And I've had to make adjustments actually just because of getting older and not needing as many calories as I've gotten older. So that's a reason for weighing myself just once a month as a checkup. That's the frequency at which I weigh myself, and it's for the most part, it's just my weight is I'm at a comfortable weight, and I don't even think about it, which is a miracle. Emily.
Hi, everyone. Emily, compulsive overeater, body obsessor. Thank you so much, Glenn, for your lead. I guess I have kind of two questions. One, I'm wondering what your morning, if you have a morning and evening routine and what that looks like. And also, do you turn your food over to a sponsor? And if so, is that the day of or the night before? Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Emily. I do not commit my food. I've been just pretty much self-monitoring for a long time. Every night without fail, I plan my food out for the next day and I write it down. I plan out my breakfast, my lunch, my dinner. It all goes down, and that helps me to know whether or not I got to bring something out of the freezer or if I think about what I have available. So I make that plan. I did commit my food just for a very short while when I was very new. And it never seemed necessary to me, just because I knew that I needed to stay abstinent because my life depended on it. And I gave it such a high importance that it just never seemed necessary. So I have done it once or twice at times when I just had some funky stuff going on in my life. And I just decided and asked a friend to say, you know, someone in the program, you know, can I commit my food to you for a couple of days? I just feel the need to do that. And I've done it. But I've worked with quite a few sponsees who that is just like the bee's knees for them to help them stay on track. But it hasn't really been much of a part of my program, but the planning of it has, and the actual executing of the food plan has. Like I said, everything gets weighed and measured, and it's not up for negotiation. It's you know, it's not an option. That's what I do. And I use that little scale in the kitchen, and the big scale in the bathroom takes care of itself. And so that's pretty much how I go with my food. And I hope that answers the question. Eric.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for your share. Just a quick question with regards to kind of turbulence in life and stuff, and something that I experience is, you know, with the program, somebody could steal my car and I could be fine. But in a movie theater, if somebody's on their phone, I can almost lose it. With those little irritations, how do you use program? The big ones, obviously, it's like, oh, well, God meant for my car to be stolen. But the lady in the theater with her phone on, how do you deal with that stuff?
That's a good one. Because with the big stuff, I just say a lot of times it's just a case of, well, what can I do about it? And I may, sometimes I'll just throw some curse words out when something happens and have a little bit of a fit or something. But I work pretty hard on just letting it go from the start. The little irritations and things like that, the little judgments that I have, some days I can go into work and I can pass, and I work in a pretty big office, and I could early in the morning, I may see like three or four different people that are in the office and notice that each one of them, I've had a judgment in my mind about. And it can be all just the smallest stuff. You know, or this person over the cubicle wall makes mouth noises when she eats with her mouth open or something like that. And that can just gnaw at me. I'm just like, close your mouth when you eat. You know, I've heard different times in different places in the meeting rooms, you know, God, please bless them and change me, and realize that the irritations are in me. And when I'm having a good day, I realize this. And then I focus on what I can do to change myself. But there are some days when 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour and a half goes by when I'm realizing that, you know, I'm forgetting all about that. And I'm just focusing on these irritations. And I'm like, if people can only read my mind, they would know how much what they're doing is ticking me off. They would stop that. They wouldn't do that. But there can be another person that's sitting next to me. My boss does sit right next to me, and he's not hearing any of that stuff and being irritated by that stuff. So obviously all those feelings are within me. So I'm just realizing that at an intellectual level, it comes when the awareness comes to mind, I'm like, okay, it's me. And I'm the common element of all those four people that I first saw in the office, that were doing something wrong or I was irritated with. I'm the that common denominator amongst all of them, so must be something going on with me. And I switch my thoughts to what I can change. And yeah, the big stuff is not too bad. I used to get really angry when certain things happened. Yesterday, I dumped a big piece of my breakfast onto the kitchen floor, and it wasn't something that was hard. It was something that was liquid. You know, and it went all over the place while I was talking to someone on the phone from the program. And she said that when I mentioned it, I was like, oh, I just, dumped all this on the floor. She goes, oh, I'll let you go then. I'm like, no. We can keep our conversation going. I'm going to let this go. I'm just going to clean it up. You know, but that's coming after years of just doing this stuff. Because, man, I used to just have the big time fits. In the old days, I would have made so much fuss over having screwed up part of my meal that finally I realized. So a friend of mine in program said one time when she was having a similar thing happen in her life, she was all upset that one a part of her meal at the restaurant wasn't right or something. And her daughter was a non-program person, said to her, Mom, you'll eat again. You know, it's like there'll be other meals. You know, so it's like you can go, you'll get do-overs. So anyway, I try not to let these things get to me anymore. Sometimes they still do, but I'm much better to let them go because I know I'm the better for it. So anyways, okay, Deb.
Thanks, Glenn. That was just a great share. And I just want to know, you talked about like not trusting people. So what is it like now in the trust and in the relationships with people through recovery?
We have a little bit over a minute for Q&A left. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for that reminder. Yeah, trusting people. That came about as I learned to trust my higher power, I guess, after truly taking the third step. And now I have a friend in program that told me one time, you don't throw your pearls before swine. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm not going to go to someone on a city street and start laying some stuff on that person, you know, and just, you know, opening my life up to them. So I'm discreet about things, but I can take healthy risks and share who I am with somebody at work, for example, or and it's just like thinking about my higher power kind of thing. Like if I use my intuition and what I believe or God's clues for me, that I'll be okay in trusting other people. But also I have to, and I heard that, also I have to just keep in mind, you know, there are levels of trust. So try a little bit here and a little bit there, healthy risk, and then that person earns my trust more so than I can do more. So that's the end of our time for questions. And I thank you everyone for your questions and the opportunity to share my opinions, which don't represent a life.